Working Draft on Tour. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Christian. How are you today?
Fine, a bit exhausted because yesterday we both were at the Mittwald Head in the Cloud or Heat in the Cloud event, or we like renamed it.
In the Cloud is about right, yeah.
Yeah, it was quite warm.
Yes.
And is still.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a fantastic festival esque conference event or like celebration crossover thing.
Like a nice nerdy summer garden party with a whacking great data center in the corner of the building.
Yeah.
Gently wearing away.
Yeah. And a well-climatized data center building, I have to add. So you also gave a talk yesterday. So there were three tracks.
Yes.
There was culture and creativity. There was DevOps and there was the tech
and
track.
Tech, because cloud and DevOps are totally different to tech.
Yes.
These are, yeah. But
totally. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's like a Michelinis kind of track where they can just put everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it always works. So you gave a talk about sustainability.
My talk was called "What Does a Fossil Free Internet in Germany Look Like?"
Yeah.
And that's because I work for an organization called the Green Web Foundation. And we're working towards a fossil free internet globally. But given the fact that I'm in Germany, like, We're a Dutch organization, but one of our headquarters, as in our biggest office, is in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm speaking at a German conference, probably makes sense to kind of adjust some of the content to fit the country. And also Germany is particularly interesting because it's the largest economy in Europe, has the largest data center sector in Europe, and arguably probably has, I think, some of the most potential to actually improve.
Yes.
Because Germany is like the land of coal and the land of solar, as we saw yesterday.
Yeah.
And like there is a chance for it to switch. Yeah, so yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also this project that you also, of course, know of, electricity maps.
Yes.
You can clearly see how like Germany is still very partly fossil driven.
Yes. Well, this is precisely what you said. You're referring to the map that basically shows how clean the electricity is all around the world.
Yep.
And like Germany's grid switches quite a lot between being very, very clean and very, very dirty.
Yep.
Depending on how windy and sunny it is, more so than other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're seeing this move to like batteries and things like that, that means you get, say, when it's clean, mm-hmm. you can get it to stay clean by actually thoughtful use of how computing works and thoughtful use of storing some of the energy that you don't need when you have too much, as it were.
Yep.
So you can use it instead of having to kind of go back to using coal a lot.
Yeah. So that's staying below that threshold where like the coal power plants are like being booted.
Yes, precisely. Yeah. That's the role that batteries are able to play inside this. And we spoke a little bit about that yesterday, about there was a big growth taking place. But primarily it was about introducing people to the idea that yes, the electricity that we view, that we rely on to power all of our digital services, it comes from somewhere.
Mm.
And as professionals, we probably should be thinking about that. And there are actually steps we can take.
Yep.
So that was it. That was the general idea behind the talk,
mm-hmm.
to give people an idea. But yeah, we can head there.
So what steps can take?
Yeah, there's a few things that you can do. We recently launched a report called The State of the Fossil Free Internet. The first one that we'll be doing every year. And we basically touched on, essentially, there's one kind of issue that we currently have, where we had a sector which was decarbonizing, but then since we've essentially seen this kind of mania to build out more and more and more data centers,
mm-hmm.
particularly to meet demands of mostly generative AI, not the actual kind of traditional kinds of AI predictive AI that we often get a lot of value for already, we see this incredible build out right now. And that's basically A, doubling the amount of energy you need to decarbonize,
mm-hmm.
but it also means that this is actually problematic in lots of other ways, because you've actually seen this idea from a shift from decarbonization to recarbonization.
Yes.
So rather than phasing out fossil fuels, you're now seeing some cases where you're seeing data centers which are powered exclusively on fossil fuels.
Yep.
And this is something that we're now seeing in Germany. Like there's one data center which is set up with its own gas turbine. And we're like, guys, this is like the opposite of where we need to be going.
Yep.
So we were speaking about some of that. But to go back to your initial question, what can you do? I think there are three things we've kind of laid out in the report. So first of all, it's actually manage the demand. Be thoughtful about it. Think about, okay, how much demand am I placing onto the grid, and how much demand am I using? Am I creating through the design of my services, for example? All right. And that's just like things like efficiency and thoughtful architecture. Mm-hmm. Now, the one was about greening the energy, which is pretty self-explanatory, but there's different ways that you can kind of have purchased more meaningful green energy versus not so meaningful green energy. And to make that concrete, some companies basically are talking about they try to decarbonize on an hourly basis, with the idea being that instead of saying we're just going to buy a normal tariff, normal energy tariff, and then buy some certificates from, say, Norway or Iceland,
yeah,
and then apply them and say they're green because the law lets you do that.
You can offset your...
Exactly. Yeah, it's a little bit like an offset. Exactly. That's one of the things that is used a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But a more convincing way is to actually meaningfully match this. So at night, you actually are matching that with, rather than just relying on solar, you might say, well, we're working with a supplier who actually gets power from wind, mm-hmm, and from solar, mm-hmm, and from storage, so that there's always some kind of meaningful, mm-hmm, clean power. And the actual kind of demand signals that we do, that, I mean, if you're purchasing from a supplier like that and they're purchasing like the batteries and things like that, that changes the cost of batteries in the long term. Mm-hmm. The same we've seen that basically Germany played a massive role in the 2000s to bring down the cost of solar and wind, yeah, such that it's basically one of the main hopes for climate right now, yeah, in terms of decarbonizing our system. We can do the same with batteries, and we can do the same with like all kinds of new technologies.
Yep.
And that's one of the things that, as a developer, you don't have to do it yourself, but you do need to make a deliberate decision. Mm-hmm. Like, who am I purchasing this from?
Yep.
And there are actually providers in Germany that do this.
Incentivize.
Exactly.
Energy providers to offer these kinds of energy mixes because there's like demand.
Exactly. Yeah. This is a new shift. This is like the cool new thing in the world of kind of energy, basically. And that's one thing that most developers haven't really had to think about, but I think there's something that we probably should be thinking about if we're going to think of ourselves as responsible technology, mm-hmm, technologists. Yep. And the final thing that we mentioned, the third thing that is in the report that we launched, was actually about just democratizing the actual industry, mm-hmm, so that you don't have three massive companies taking up more than half of all of the sector, mm-hmm, because
but you have the three hyperscalers.
Yes, the three hyperscalers, because the priorities that they have, it's pretty clear that they're not really aligned with the goals, like the climate goals that I think most of us in society.
Mm.
And that's one thing that came up when I was presenting. But in the report, this is the thing we talk about. We're saying, well, we need to have a wider set of ownership models. You need to have a kind of more diverse ecosystem, mm, of, yep, providers. Because when we're at a conference where you have a company which is much, much more climate aligned and climate aware than some of them, so company... one of the hyperscalers, which is literally deploying a new data center with the same data center capacity, 2.7 gigawatts, as all of Germany,
mm-hmm,
right? And they're like, they've just said, oh, we're going to do a deal with Chevron to power this. So you basically got, that gives you that is a clear statement that you have very, very different priorities.
Yes.
For society versus this company, yep, right? So that's one of the things that you need to be thinking about. And like, I think when you have a more democratized, larger set of smaller players, then you don't have this unaccountability essentially that you have this, because this should be outrageous to most of us,
yeah,
that's happening. But yeah, if we didn't have such concentration, you might not see things like that so much.
I would also say that only the hyperscalers are able to build data centers and plan them with a power plant included, because I don't think Midwald or Metzner or any of the typical European hosters is big enough and also mad enough to be able to build such a thing. So
this is true. There is a lot when you do hear some of the big stories about saying, I know, let's put together a on-site massive gas-fired power station exclusively for, say, the exclusively for a data center, you generally see it being aimed at large hyperscale providers. All right. Now, that isn't always Microsoft, Amazon, and Google, but usually the people who are building that would like are hoping to sell to groups like that. And that's when you see these mega projects, particularly in the US. They will usually kind of use these words to use these companies. So, yeah, we're in talks with it. But whether they actually have that contract or not is another matter. If there's a whole question about how speculative this boom actually is. And we've seen quite a number of projects actually not make it in the US, for example. But it's not just the hyperscalers who are actually driving this. You do see the data center sector themselves trying to do things like this. And the example that we mentioned in, say, the example of a massive 60 megawatt gas-fired power station, that's largely being aimed at the US hyperscalers. But it may be the case that once it's built, another kind of company might come into the role, because you are seeing lots and lots of new entrants into this field because there's a boom. And it may be that there are even European providers who, or European companies who are a bit more relaxed about gas than really they should be, given the state of the climate. And like, it's warm today, it's not like it's going to get cooler, right?
Absolutely. So you also offer the Green Web Foundation itself offers also like tooling around like that helps developers and everybody else also to get visibility into these things, and also to maybe get closer to that goal.
I can tell you a little bit about that. So I'm glad you mentioned Electricity Maps before. So earlier on this year, we did a collaboration with Electricity Maps to basically put the carbon intensity of every single country into CO2JS, our kind of flagship library. Now, if you have
Firefox... We have to explain what CO2JS is.
So CO2JS is a JavaScript library that you can use in any kind of product, and it will give you, it'll tell you how clean power is based on where you are in the world, because it's basically got like all the lookups. So if I'm in, say, Germany, I know it's going to be this. If I'm in France, it's going to be that, and so on. All right.
So it, like, it's always where the visitor comes from, right?
We have it set up so that it's just a lookup table, basically. Yeah. That's what we have inside it. That's the deal we do with Electricity Maps. So we have annual figures there. You can use that. And if you have Firefox installed on your computer, you probably have access, you probably have this code already installed on your computer as well, because CO2JS is used inside the Firefox browser to provide some of the kind of carbon metrics in their developer tools themselves.
Yeah,
because they are were the first browser to work with us, and in fact,
they have like a fantastic like profiling tool to like see at what moment in time on your website how much electricity was consumed, which part of your computer.
Yes, so that you've got that kind of detail. So you can basically optimize it, that micro-level detail. So you can, you know, optimize at the micro-level for carbon. And we initially had some data from another organization called Ember, who are a nonprofit who have been publishing this information. But the thing we found with that Electricity Maps data was actually, it's really, really good for the grid that you're actually on. Because in certain parts of the world, the grid might be very, very different. For example, if you're in the US on, say, the East Coast, you're going to be using a lot of coal, right? But on the West Coast, you might be using loads and loads of, say, hydro and solar, which means means you will have much, much cleaner power. So you need to kind of represent this inside it. So the thing
it's more detailed than the one that
it's much better geographic detail. Yes. Now, I'll share with you is that this is geographic detail, which is one thing they need to take into account. But obviously, solar panels don't work as well at night as they do during the day, all right? So there's a kind of temporal thing you need to take into account as well. Now, if you want to design systems that respond to these changes in carbon intensity throughout the day, then Electricity Maps provide that as a service. We don't do that. We just have
the annual data.
Exactly, So that's what we have, so you can start. And then when you want to actually get a bit more sophisticated, or you want to have things respond, because who knew that, like, the power in Germany is negative at lunchtime during the summer most of the time, because there's that much signal. All right, these are the things that are useful to be aware of, and that's what Electricity Maps does. But we started to kind of at least give people something so they can start to understand and realize, okay, wow, there's this whole dynamic thing, and there are all these things I can do to like change where I might run computing to like kind of change the environmental impact of doing that, for example.
I think one of your colleagues, Fairshad.
Fairshad, yes, Fairshad.
I think he built a project where he used that in Cloudflare workloads, I think.
Yes, you're talking about the GridAware websites project. Yeah. So we were using, we actually worked with Electricity Maps to get a specific API that was available for free, basically. So normally, if you want to have very, very high detailed data, the kind of data that you would need to use for accounting, you might pay for that. And there's like a basically a subscription you can use that you can integrate into your business, for example. But we worked with them to get kind of levels API available. So you don't have the specific numbers in kind of grams of CO2 per hour, but you do get high, low, and medium, which is enough for you to design things accordingly.
Yeah, and that's easier to measure than like creating buckets yourself.
Exactly. So this is the thing that's kind of that was the work we had to put into that, because honestly, every grid is slightly different. So what is high, low, and medium matters on a per grid basis. Yeah. So that's one thing we have, and that provides a really nice, easy API for you to use that. So yes, there's an open source library that we have for that now. Mm-hmm. If you look up Grid Aware and Green Web Foundation, we should be at the top of the list in most search engines. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing you can do. And that doesn't use CO2JS, but that uses some of the other code we have, because we have a number of open source projects in our like batch repositories. You know?
Yeah, you also have like this, what is it, like do we, like the Verzeichnis, what is it in like an index of web posters?
Indeed, yeah. This is how we started out. So the Green Web Foundation initially started as basically a list and a way of checking if a website runs on green energy. So we still have that, and that means that if you have any domain, you can look up the domain and say, okay, where is my site being hosted? And what we do behind the scenes is we find where that domain is being hosted. We look. We basically contact that provider, or moreover, the provider contacts us, and then we look.
Because you already have like established yourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
They have an interest in being hosted.
So, and then if we have evidence that they're running on green energy, you know, that they showed like this is the tariff I'm using, or these are the steps we're taking, we'll show that in a website, and then that means that you get a checking system, and we get between 5 and 15 million checks a day, depending on the day, to be honest. And we also have a directory, which is the list of all these ones. So it may be that you're looking for, I'm looking for a provider of a certain managed service, let's say WordPress or a platform as a service or a managed database. We list that stuff so that you can actually kind of think through your stack and then see how you can green your stack, basically. Yep. That's the stuff that we do there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. And, finally, yesterday you also presented something new, I think, or rather new at least, which is carbon.txt.
Carbon.txt, This is our new project right now. So I spoke before about how we have a kind of checking system, which is based on domains. Now, in order to use that, you have to trust us for that. And like, okay, we have a team who do this research, and there's some work that happens there, but we would really like this to be not something that's run by a small team of people, but instead, this is something that should happen at protocol level. Mm-hmm. So the kind of big idea behind carbon.txt is to set this expectation that, of course, this kind of sustainability data that we look for should be available if you look up a domain, just like how you look up robots.txt or LLMs.txt. Mm-hmm. We think you should be able to find the stuff for how green a domain is. Mm-hmm. So that's the stuff we use. And the thing we're doing is we're basically shifting from having a centralized database to nudging people towards having a more distributed approach, because that would allow other Green Web Foundation kind of organizations in, say, India or China. If we have the kind of same approach, then that allows us to change how the web works, basically. That's the big idea. Mm-hmm. And that allows also more kinds of innovation on this as well, on the side as well. That allows people to kind of try new ideas. So it may be that we have a bunch, we do this with primarily hosting providers right now, but it may be that, let's say, you're building some kind of self-hosted solar-powered websites or things like that. Maybe that's a point of innovation that means that, okay, people start changing how people design sites like that. And there are actually examples. There's a project called the Solar Protocol, which has a bunch of Raspberry Pis all around the world, where when you visit a website, basically, the request is routed to the Raspberry Pi in the world with the most battery and where it's sunniest, right? Nice. And and in the world of CMSs, I found out that Dries Buytert of Drupal, mm-hmm. he's done something similar. So if you go to dries.es, his website, mm-hmm. you can see his website. But there's also solar.dries, where he's just, here's my website. Here's how I'm powering it with literally solar and battery mm-hmm. on my garden roof.
Was that the thing you showed?
That was the thing I was showing,
Like there were dots for every day.
Exactly.
And you could see where there was like a few days where I think the service was even like
it was a bit unavailable.
Slower, I don't know, because there wasn't enough solar.
This is the idea. Like there are things that you can do, and you can change some of that by changing the batteries or mm-hmm. maybe changing what your device is doing to kind of make it through these times.
Yeah.
But the reason we wanted to set up something like Carbon.Tex was to essentially have a space where innovators and people who are working on ideas can try new things, so that rather than all the good ideas just coming from one place, us, they were from a community. Because we've seen how things work with open source. We've seen how new ideas come through. We figured, let's go for something like that because, well, we like the web. Our entire background is open data and open source. We figured maybe this is one place you can actually kind of bring some new ideas to bear and hopefully accelerate how, I guess, this change in culture that we might actually have. Because I think most developers would like to be more responsible developers, but a lot of the time they don't know about this because they've had no reason to learn.
Yep.
So hopefully this makes it a bit easier for them to kind of start getting into this, in my view, new and kind of exciting world.
And like to get like more into detail about the carbon text file. So how is that like basically what you write in there is like all kinds of information, how your website is being.
What we have is we have a relatively lightweight syntax. So it's largely a TOML file at the moment, because the thing we wanted to have something which was easy for humans to read, but also for machines to read.
Yes.
Yeah. And one of the principles inside it is basically links or it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. The idea being that you might have a carbon.txt file that has a little bit of lightweight syntax, like what's your organization, for example, or do you have a supply chain, for example, and or if you've met some kind of certification, where would you be? You know, what was that certification, and where's the link to mm-hmm. the supporting data? So there's stuff like that. It's quite lightweight syntax. It's designed in the open on carbontext.org, that's basically what we have. So these are lightweight files which are designed to be passed quite easily, or passed by various validators and tools. And we have an open source validator that people can use themselves. Mm-hmm. Or you can use our hosted version if you want to just point at a domain and see what comes out of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, nice. Yeah, I think you showed like pieces of it. But,
yes.
So I saw the link things, but I wasn't fully sure. Like I couldn't fully parse it myself.
Yeah, to be honest, the thing I wasn't, when I was presenting yesterday, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not quite sure. Tech is a very, very wide term. So I'm not going to make it too technical.
Yes.
So that's why we ended up being quite an expansive talk first.
Yeah.
There was like a bit of code for the nerds at the end, right?
Yeah.
So we showed some code samples. But
no, it was perfect.
Yeah.
You can still, it's just like you gave it yesterday.
Yeah.
I hadn't time to like do research because we all returned like pretty late to the hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's actually one thing that is probably worth mentioning here is that literally the day before, I had a much deeper dive Smashing Magazine.
Yeah,
they actually did.
I registered for the Smashing Meats.
The Smashing Meats. Yeah. They did a sustainability one. So I was opening this, and then there was Ines. Oh, Ines, I'm so sorry.
Ines Akrap or something.
Thank you, Akrap. I forgot how to pronounce her surname. So I wrote the foreword for her new book that mm-hmm. she was actually telling people about, because she's launched. She just finished a book about sustainable web design mm-hmm. with, I think, Chris Chinchilla. So she was a speaker after me. And then Tom Greenwood, who was like one of the original people to build like mm-hmm. the website Carbon website back in.
Yeah, he also wrote this book, right?
Exactly. Yeah. He was also one of the authors of one of the books around sustainable web design for, I forget the name of the actual book, but they did it with a book apart.
It was sustainable web design.
It might actually So there's a number of authors, and we basically did an entire session all about that. So I did a kind of deep dive on carbon.txt, the theory of change behind it, some of the things we've learned along the way. Mm-hmm. And then you had Ines talking about here's where things are.
Yep.
And you had Tom Greenwood saying, here's what's happened over the last 10 years, for example. Mm-hmm. So for people who are listening to this and want to learn a bit more, that's one place to go to.
Yeah, we'll link to it. I registered. Yeah. I knew that I would not be able to participate, but I wanted to register to get the videos afterwards. Because it was the birthday of my nephew, and we were in the mountains, and there was like crappy internet anyways. So I was just keen on getting the videos fast and not having to wait or like be on a lookout on YouTube at all.
Well, glad you got here. We got a chance to get it from the horse's mouth directly as well.
So the final thing maybe we could quickly discuss is our involvement in the WCC and in the Web Sustainability Interest Group.
Yes,
I think.
There are a few other projects going on. So I think last year, a little over a year ago, the W3C, as in the guys behind HTML, CSS, and the web part of JavaScript, they hired a director of sustainability, and she's been supporting the web an interest group inside the interest group. Is a bit like a kind of like working group, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah, like not super official.
Exactly. Yeah, then one level down. So there's like, I mean, in the W3C kind of jargon, there's like community groups, interest groups, and then working groups.
Yes.
So the working groups manage CSS and HTML. So it's one down. And so that's the idea. It's on
but
the
I
way.
Guess you
to
don't need to like have a membership or be in, like an invited expert. Jump through these.
You still need to become invited experts to be part of it. Or I mean, there are still steps you need to jump through like that. So it's got that level of officialness.
So, higher bars than the community.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's in there. And one of the things that group has been working on for the last, I think, year and a half actually, is what something called the Web Sustainability Guidelines, the WSGs. These are they're kind of, you might think of them as a little bit like the WCAG, but for sustainability.
Yeah.
So that's one thing they're doing. And independently, I work for the Green Web Foundation. We're a Dutch nonprofit of, I'd say, 9 people. There is a larger body called the Green Software Foundation with companies like Google and Microsoft and GitHub and Accenture and all these people there.
Are they related or linked?
One of the founding members of the Green Software Foundation. Right. So we were one of, because that was set up about 5 years ago, because it had its fifth birthday recently. So that was set up with us, the Green Web Foundation, but also Microsoft put money in, and I believe maybe not GitHub, but a few other companies put the money in to actually get it set up. And I've been involved with that group for a while, so I host one of their podcasts called Environment Variables, and I also we're leading. We basically kind of brokered a deal between the W3C and the Green Software Foundation, because they have a standard called Software Carbon Intensity. All right?
Yeah.
So with the Green Web Foundation, we were like a logical group to kind of work inside that to say, okay, let's make a more specialized one specifically for websites and web applications. We said, well, okay, we don't mind doing this, but the W3C is right there, and like we should probably have these conversations. So we ended up brokering a memorandum of understanding. So the GSF and the W3C are working together, and like we're leading, as in the Green Web Foundation is leading this new standardization process. But the key thing is that we got consultation with all three, so that people know what each other's doing rather than it just being
everybody working in isolation. Yeah,
precisely. So that's the thing we're doing, and it looks like we're aiming for the first draft of a spec for software carbon intensity for the web, something that all these various tools from vendors can actually kind of conform to. We're aiming for Q4 to have the first version of this app for people to start implementing and using. So hopefully this time next year, we should actually have like an ISO standard or something being on the ISO track, and a number of vendor tools which are interoperable that follow the same standard, which would be wonderful.
Yeah,
because that's something that, you know, you need standards to have any kind of interoperability and comparability and kind of like and kind of basically set up a real kind of movement around this.
Yep.
So yeah, that's the thing we're working on as well.
Yeah, that's nice. Also seeing how successful WCAG has become.
Yes.
Because like it's now being ported and applied to apps, to like software product.
Exactly. I mean, this is also one of the ways that you're able to kind of change some of the culture related to kind of like computing, right? So WCAG, you know, for accessibility, yes, it has an impact here. But when you have a standard which you can show buy-in and you can show people actively using, that means you can then say, well, we have laws for society which make sure that certain groups are certain groups' needs are always met.
Right.
And the existence of things like the WCAG and the existence of there being clear evidence of organizations working and there being something that which is objective enough to kind of base laws around means that you can now have things like the European Accessibility Act, which basically means that everyone has to be building websites that take into account the needs of people who have disability needs. And that feels like, for me, that was one of the things that kind of attracted me about the web. The idea that you want to have something which is universally available, serves everyone, we saw Tim Berners-Lee, he says this is for everyone. And like, I think that's a real rallying cry. And yeah, this is, I get a bit emotional about this stuff, but that's kind of where we saw it with the WCAG and accessibility. We figured we should be able to do something with sustainability because we've only got one planet right now,
That's a fantastic idea, and it's a fantastic work you're doing. Always like following along, really interested where that's going.
Well, it's nice of you to say. We're still a small group, and we could always do bigger. Mm-hmm. So I think our movement, if people are listening to this and they like the idea of like more sustainable, also free web, then there's lots of places they can get involved. They can speak with the Green Web Foundation. Mm-hmm. They can do work with the W3C, these kind of groups here. Mm-hmm. If they're a larger corporate or if they're working inside a company, there are places like the W3C and the Green Software Foundation now. And if you're a techie and you just want to find a community of other climate-minded techies, there's one organization called climateaction.net, which is one of the most supportive and really, really useful communities to be part of. Mm-hmm. I was working in that since 2018, actually, and it's gone from like 70 people to like 10,000 members. And that's one of the places where I learn loads from like a peer, particularly. So yeah, those are things that if people are listening and they're curious, that's for the show notes.
Yeah, we'll definitely link to it also to the York profile. So if there's any questions arising, coming up,
I'm all ears. I'd love to hear.
Yeah. So thank you, Chris. It was fantastic to finally meet you here because I knew your face already from like things you do, as well as the ones from your colleagues.
Well, Christian, thank you for letting me do this off English and sort of off Deutsch.
So you can like speak German, but
I'm slowly learning. But I think I would sound much better on a podcast in English than auf Deutsch.
I totally understand. And I know it's hard. Like understanding your language is always okay. But then speaking, like you're always like looking for the right words.
Yeah. Ich habe Restaurant Deutsch, nicht Podcast Deutsch.
Okay. Then maybe at a restaurant podcast. That's that. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
safe travels.
Thank you very much.
And hope to see you soon again. And I will link to anything we discussed for people to dig in.
Dankeschön, Christian, and gute Reise.
Dankeschön.
Okay.
Bis bald. Tschüss.